Well, let's take your phone calls and questions for Nick Jenkel when we come right back, including your stories on precognition, deja vu, and also after life and death experiences. And welcome back to Coast, Nick Jenkel with us. Nick, where do we get your book, Spiritual Atheist? Amazon, I assume?
Hi, George. Yes, Amazon is probably the best, even though we might love to loathe it. It's the best place to get it. You can order it in Barnes & Noble or anywhere else. And it's called Spiritual Atheist. Look out for the second edition. That's the one that's got the most up-to-date information in it.
What was the most surprising thing for you when you were writing the book?
Well, I mean, talking about these experiences, writing a book is really an intense experience for me anyway.
Oh, sure is. Yeah, it is.
I'm sure you know. It's the way I have worked out how I think best, ultimately, and how I bring my thoughts together and feel my thoughts in many ways. It's not for the faint-hearted. I wouldn't recommend it to everyone. But I listen deeply to these supernatural forces, if you like, when I'm writing, because I kind of start with an idea of it and then it all sort of comes. This particular book was very strange. So this is actually a good example of what I see as a supernatural phenomenon. I was at a dinner and I was actually writing another book, which I've just returned to, a book on transformational leadership. And it was a dinner for Israeli soldiers who are going through trauma, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway.
Like PTSD, like our troops
exactly.
are going through.
It was a program run in the UK by the synagogue that I was born as a member of and then left when I was 15.
Okay.
I was back in this very synagogue where I'd given this sermon about atheism and about God being nonsense. So it was very strange, again, already strange that I'm in this synagogue building. I get put next to an Israeli army officer, and he's a very devout Jew and also a mystical Jew. And he goes, so what do you do? And I sort of try to explain that I'm basically a modern-day mystic, but I don't believe in a Jewish, particularly religious God or the Bible of that sort. And he's like going, wow. So how? He couldn't even comprehend that you could be a mystic without being part of an organized religion. And literally, I had the most intense download. I had to leave the room because I was getting so much information. I sketched out in 20 seconds the 10 chapters of the book. They are the same 10 chapters in the book. All I did was add one chapter more at the advice of my editor, and that was the book. So it kind of, the whole thing just came to me in like a you know, gigabyte download from the universe. Bravely, I'd like to think, I stopped writing the book that was made the most business sense at the time to write. I just focused on this book for the last 2 years, which is a big risk and a big thing for me, because also this book doesn't necessarily fit so obviously with the way I make my living.
Mm-hmm,
and so,
right.
But I followed what I believe the universe wanted me to have this book out there, and it's been really well received. And it was really good to write because it forced me to really understand, where are my boundaries in my philosophy? What do I really believe? Underneath all my practical methodology and tips and way to live, what do I believe beneath it? But that download was intense for me, you know, to get a whole book in 20 minutes in a synagogue where I became an atheist was, you know, quite a thing.
That's pretty impressive. Let's go to David in New Mexico. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, hi, George. I waited 30 years to speak with you the first time and not so long to get to the second time.
Good for you.
And serendipity has caught us again. You've caught me up past my bedtime, and you're talking about something that I've been wanting to talk to you about for a while. But let me run a couple things past you, and then if you'd give me any feedback that comes to mind. On the question that you posed, anything serendipitous or any of the categories that you had listed off. First of all, on the subject of religion, spirituality, or however, what has come to me in the last decade or so is I've grown not so much to trust human beings claiming to be representing some form of spirituality or religion or however. And the way I've learned to explain it to other people is that what I believe in is I believe in what is, meaning whatever comes to me, you know, through whether it's through people or just through some other force, and when it shows itself to me, hits me in some way that I resonate with, then that's what I feel and adopt and so on. Now let me go to a couple. Let me rattle off a couple quick scenarios, whether they fall into precognition or any of the other categories that you thought of, and you can, like I said, I'd like some feedback. And previously, George, the last time I talked to you, I shared with you an experience, which I won't go back into, but I had felt like I was literally being psychically pulled, and I was pulled on a beeline right to a person who had committed suicide.
Right, right.
And was in an area where, as the sheriff had told me, would likely not be found for more than a year, if ever, and somehow I was pulled directly to the person. And a couple other, like I said, a couple other quick things that are similar to that. When I was a child of like 8, 9, 10 years old, for some reason I had what seems like a compulsion. I bought the camping equipment, I don't want to say survival equipment, but things to go out in the woods and be alone and such like that. And in later life, those skills that I learned that I felt called to learn as an 8, 9, 10 year old have come in very, very, very handy, for actual survival. And then, another thing that happened to me, I said to you that I literally felt psychically pulled where I had no choice as to find the person that I described. Another event that happened to me is I was working with a client in a professional situation, commercially and professionally, where it would be inappropriate to lean in and kiss this woman, and I felt psychically pulled to do just that. And what she said was, "How did you know?" And that was the next thing. Another thing that happened to me was that I had moved away from my home state of Minnesota and away from my family for several years, was out in the mountains of Wyoming, had woke up one morning thinking I had had a bad dream, a nightmare about a tornado that was, I was at my family's farm place, and I saw the tornado, visually I saw it passing just to the north of the farm place, and I was collecting my relatives and on the farm and calling them to safety of shelter on an appropriate spot on the farm. And, thought nothing more of it, that it was a dream. And then I have the radio on the next day.
It happened.
I find out that there was a tornado that passed exactly where I had visualized it going. And a relative of mine happened to be in a car driving through a thunderstorm that contained a tornado. And his car was lifted and drifted. Nothing bad happened. But that had happened. And then I had another precognition.
Well, let's get some talks from Nick here as the clock ticks here, David. Nick, your observations on some of the things that have happened to him.
Yeah, George. I mean, this is, totally aligned with my belief, which is, you've saved lives with this information. This is what it's there for. I believe it really is there to create more life and to support life and to heal life.
It's like we're given antennas or something.
Yeah. Exactly. But why is that? I try and explain to my super skeptical friends, why is that so hard to believe that the universe would give us the brain capacity or the heart capacity or both to pick up information, need and suffering in others, whether it's, as you said, the person committing suicide or the woman you lean into. I mean, why would it be so crazy to believe that we're given these capacities to help others, to heal, to be shamans? And the bit you said at the very beginning of your experience about not believing anyone who purports to be a priest of some sort, and I'm totally with you. That's why I call myself a spiritual atheist, because everyone is the shaman. You are your own shaman, waiting for you to heal yourself and to heal others. And that's I think some part of the journey of life is to become that version of us as we go forward and use our skills to save and improve lives.
And if it's a God-given power, we all have it.
This is the bit so important. This is the rub. We all have it. Not just we all have it, we're meant to have it. And I fundamentally believe that until we listen to it and learn to understand it and discern it from fear, because there's also a lot of fear information in us as well, what I call it in the book, instinct versus intuition, and they can feel quite similar. Instinct is the voice of fear within us, survival, run away, kill them, get away. Intuition is the voice of this connective consciousness saying, help this person, lean in, go to this place right now and support them, you know, whatever it is, whatever we're being called to do, we have to listen.
Let's go to El Paso, Texas. Bobby's with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Bobby, go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I've always had the run of the mill precognitions for, like, for instance, the telephone, and a lot of times I'll call a close friend of mine, and they'll say, I was just thinking about you. Or things like, I'll be concerned about my pet, and sure enough, I take them in, and there's something wrong. But my precognition experience happened a few months ago. I belong to a group of women that meets once a week. We talk about books at church. And one of the women was passing around an ultrasound of her grandbaby. And when I looked at the picture, this feeling or this voice came into my head that just said, this baby will not live. I didn't say anything. But sure enough, a few weeks later, she told us that her daughter had had a miscarriage.
Wow.
And that really shook me up.
You've got some abilities. How do you hone your skills here, Nick, when you have these abilities? How do you make them even better?
So, yeah, I mean, this is a very powerful story, and it really just touched me into the reality of that life and that moment.
Yeah. Like,
those parents, and you know, this working on ourselves to hone this ability, ultimately for me the start point is healing our trauma, because when we're traumatized, when I say trauma, I don't mean anything necessarily massively showy happened to us in our childhood. I mean anything that as a child was too much to understand or cope with at the time. It gets pushed down inside us and we call it trauma. And that trauma starts to then, it's very noisy inside our consciousness, inside our heart and our mind. And as long as we've got a hurt heart, it's very hard to hear these things. We can still get, you know, breakthroughs of supernatural information, but it's hard to hear it, it's hard to discern it. So there's only really one way to start, which is to heal our hearts, is the great journey we all make to become adept. And that's the path of the shaman, you know, in indigenous cultures. You have to go through many years of challenge to purify and clarify our hearts, and then we can hear it. That said, you know, every day tapping into these things, starting to look for these synchronicities, and if you imagine they are breadcrumbs that we have to follow to find the goodness, to serve the goodness, what are they? What are the breadcrumbs? What you know? Pay attention to that thought when you flicker of your cousin or your dad who you haven't spoken to for 3 years because you had a fight. Pay attention to that flicker as it comes across. Maybe he or she is in desperate need of your connection, your love, your attention right now.
Can you alter these perceptions if you get this precognition and you don't like it? Can you change it, or is it set in stone?
A really interesting question I've never thought about. Do you mean, can you take information and then somehow alter it?
Sometimes twist it around. Let's say, for example, you have precognition of you being involved in a car accident.
Yes.
And okay. And then theoretically, that car accident should happen. Theoretically. But what if you alter things where you decide, I'm not going to drive in a car today?
Oh, I would say that's the point of the precognition.
Yes.
You know, that's the point.
So you can, by reacting to the precognition, you can alter it.
Absolutely. You know, I believe the universe has a number of sort of paths that are unfolding in every moment. bifurcations, if you like. Sliding Doors moments is the classic movie where we, you know, a sliding door opens, do we go one way or the other way? And I think the whole point of these precognitions of any sort, whether it's from a dream last night or whether it's a flash of something happening, is to alter our path, is to change what we're thinking and doing and behaving and change what occurs in the real, real world of cars and airplanes and whatever.
Let's go to Peter in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Peter, go ahead, sir.
Hello, Art. Great program. First of all, I agree with about 95% of what Nick says.
Well, that's a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah, it really is. And I'm glad to hear him. But by the way, before I start, I just wanted to tell you, I met Father Malachi Martin several times. I studied to be a Catholic priest for 10 years, and then to discern whether I wanted to be a priest, I went up to the Trappist Monastery up in Snowmass, and Father Keating there met with every year with Buddhist monks about meditation and things, and Father Malachi used to come. I didn't talk with him very much, but I got to know him. What an incredible person.
Great person. Great person.
What I wanted to say is that... when the universe talks to you, you do not act on every impulse. Art, you know, Ouija boards have evil, and the universe has evil in it also. I hope you're the person you can tell us how we discern what is evil and what isn't evil. Because if you act on the devil and the Satan, which I'm not a big believer in, but he's the angel of light, and the word that we were taught genuinely deceives people. So you can't act on every impulse. You have to discern whether it's an impulse that will help the universe. And so anyway, could he...
We'll get him to talk about that, Peter. And of course, a lot of people still call me Art. Go ahead, Nick.
I agree with 95% of what you said just now. And there's just one discernment that I would put, and this is my spiritual atheist viewpoint. So I agree, we absolutely have to discern these impulses. And I would almost say that 90% of our impulses are instinct, survival instinct, which, as we know, is either fight or flee. And that's not helpful to anyone, usually. I mean, sometimes we're actually have a survival moment, and we do have to fight or flee. But most of the time, we're not. We're just stressed out and traumatized. And for me, that is evil. It's not a force of an entity. It's us acting from fear. And it's loud, noisy impulses inside us. Shut them down, run away, shout at them, whatever. And then we have these intuitions, which are the voice, some might call the voice of God. I don't use that language personally, but it's fine by me to use it, which is how we help and serve and heal others. And that is our angelic side, the better nature.
Indeed. Stay with us, Nick. We're going to come back and take final phone calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, tomorrow night on Coast to Coast, Jerry Corsi, one of our regular guests, of course, who's got pulled in on the Mueller investigation, will join us talking about his latest work called Silent No More, how he became a political prisoner involved in this. Should be an incredible interview. And then Wayne Walker joins us to talk about hypnosis on Coast to Coast. We are back with our final segment with Nick Jenkel as we talk about his latest work, Spiritual Atheist. What is new next for you, Nick? What's on your plate?
Following the next breadcrumb, I've just started rewriting this book that I was conceiving of a couple of years ago called Born to Transform, about how we're all born with the capabilities we need to lead change in the world. So that's kind of fun. And I'm also breaking ground on an app, which is my first app.
I've been holding
off from app building for a while, and now I'm really clear I've got something I really want to bring into a digital form that I think can give lots of people access to some of these tools, rather than having to come to a workshop.
Do let us know when the app is done, and we'll send out some tweets and put it on our website for you.
Oh, George, that would be fabulous. Thank you so much.
Love to do that. As you look at all the things that we've been studying, that we've been talking about, do you think that Jesus had these abilities as well? Did he have these powers?
I think Jesus, as in the historical Jesus, was clearly a man who had intense ability to bring the future into the present, which is kind of what I think we're always talking about here, is somehow bringing something that doesn't exist yet in this reality into the present. And as a prophet, that's what you're doing. You're bringing the voice of the universe into the moment, and spreading that message. And Jesus was his everything he said that I've read is just love, you know, beaming out from a higher order wisdom than was mainstream at the time and possibly mainstream now. And it's not an easy ride.
No.
As Russell, your previous guest, has experienced, the voices of fear and the voices of ideology of control and power try and shut down people who bring these messages to the world. And it's really tough as an individual to go through that.
Let's go to our calls again. First-time caller John in Austin, Texas. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good morning to all.
You too.
To me, the notion of precognition suggests that the future is already written. Everything's already set, which would make us all just actors in a giant YouTube video. So how do you resolve that conflict with free will?
Interesting question.
Yeah, right to the nubble of one of the great questions of all philosophy, right?
Exactly.
I don't know what you think, George, but I don't believe that everything's being rewritten. I think let's just say, 100 different paths that could happen, and then we get some precognition about one of them or one of them to avoid or one of them to move towards, and that's what we then get the free will choice to do.
Mm-hmm.
I believe we're in an evolutionary system, it's not written, it's evolving in the moment. Like the symphony is a live symphony of music, and there are different ways that symphony could go today, depending upon me, but not just me, all the other people in the symphony. So we're all in this interactive, complex web, and that's why it's so no one human mind can fully grasp it all, which is why I think people are called mystics, because you just realize there's a mystery to this enormity. But you can pick up like, oh, I need to play this note right now. Don't know why, I've got to play this note right now. And then the symphony moves with that note, but also your note and the caller's note, and we all move in constant flow and creating the future, but with information from the future, which is, you know, quite something to.
I think it's not set in stone, because I do think we have the ability, as we've been talking about, Nick, to alter things that occur. You know, for example, with precognition, maybe you get the lottery numbers and you use them and win. And and then we use the analogy of the car accident that you see yourself in, and you decide, I'm not driving tonight, or I'm going to take a different route, and you avoid a car accident. I think that has to do with free will, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. This is where the free will is bursting into the moment. These sort of one of the old psychologists, William James's colleague, called them subliminal uprushes. We get this uprush of insight from below the unconscious, deep into our being, and we do get to alter what's occurring. But what's occurring has probably a limited number of possibilities, but they're constantly being rewritten. This is where complex systems theory kind of helps a lot, is that we get these bifurcation points where we can take the high road or we can take the low road. And the low road might be drinking another whiskey, even though we know we don't want to be a drinker anymore. It's very embedded in our nervous system. It's the likely path. But each moment we get the choice, I'm not going to do that. Instead, I'm going to go to the gym, or I'm going to meditate, or I'm going to call my daughter and tell her I love her. So we do get this chance to alter the predictable unfolding.
Mm-hmm. We sure do. Let's go to Ruben in Maine. Welcome to the show. Ruben, go ahead, sir.
You mean Urban?
Yeah. Or is it Urban or Ruben? I've got Ruben on my screen, but I apologize for that. Okay, Herb, go ahead.
You probably just didn't understand me. I was using my speakerphone at the time. I've talked to you before. I've called in about my haunted house.
Yes.
And, well,
out your way.
I was actually listening to the show, and I'm thinking, I've had episodes of, like, ESP thinking, not really thinking much about it. One of them was my father had gone into the hospital, and he was going to have surgery. He had some bypass surgery done, and I was sick, so I couldn't really go to the hospital to see him because I didn't want to, you know, get him sick. And I had a feeling when I was talking to him that this is the last time I'm going to be talking to him. And sure enough, the next day he passed away. And there was another time when I was working on my house and I was doing siding, and something told me I should be calling my brother all day long. And I was so busy, I never got around to it. And the next day I find out that he fell down off a ladder and completely shattered his leg and was laying there for hours outside waiting because he couldn't call 911 because he didn't have his phone. He couldn't get a hold of anybody. He just laid there for hours. And finally, he was able, somehow his wife came, found him, and called an ambulance to come get him. But it was just like all day long he was on my mind. And the third one was there was a guy at work. This guy was a drinker. He smoked weed. And for some reason, I saw him as a preacher. I don't know why, but I told him, and he bows his head to shake his head, and he says, my mother's been telling me the same thing. And I found that, and this was like 15 years ago, and I just found out a couple weeks ago, I was talking to another friend of mine from work, him and I knew each other, and so I asked him, I said, whatever happened to Mike? And he says, he quit work, he's preaching now. He's a preacher. I'm like, I can't believe it. It was just really weird.
Great stories there. There's a million of them, Nick.
There are. And I think, and it does seem to be happening more. I don't know whether it's just the nature of the way the world's evolving that we are being asked to tap in more because we're in such a mess in so many areas. That would seem like an obvious way the universe would say, listen, you've got to pay attention more because there's more stuff to deal with than ever before.
Cameron's with us now in Birmingham, Alabama. Hi, Cameron. Go ahead.
Hey, so I've had deja vu on multiple occasions, two of which were very pivotal in life. Most recently, I had a moment of deja vu at my current job. But the one prior to it was a moment where a friend of mine lost their life. And
oh, geez.
I was involved in the scenario in the Hindu Kush Mountains of Afghanistan, and I had seen it happen. And just as it played out, it hit me that, holy crap, I've seen this before. And I don't understand. I believe in predestination. I mean, I understand free will, but predestination, I feel, plays a little bit into it, because no matter the choice I made, it was happening either way.
It was going to happen regardless in your case?
Yeah. I mean, the individual at hand, I had played every card I had in my hand in an effort to keep that individual from leading the mission, and that individual was shot and killed.
There are some things, Nick, that just won't change. And why is that?
Well, maybe that's just what that person has to go through for some other reason that we don't know. Someone else's learning, someone else's growth, someone else's benefit. I mean, a simple thing for me is, you know, you miss the bus on the way to work, the train, whatever. You can get upset about that, or you can go, maybe I was going to have a crash. Maybe there's a reason why I need to talk to someone on the next bus. You know, you don't know. We don't know. That's the universe knows, and we can't always grasp it. And it's almost part of our controlling, what I call control mode, that wants to know everything and wants to know why we got that information. And maybe there are some people whose lives have to go in a certain way for other people around them to learn and move into different directions. It's a great puzzle.
Where does destiny take over? That no matter what happens, it's your preconceived destiny. It is what it is.
I do fundamentally sense that there's multiple destinies in every moment. I really do. I don't think there are infinite, but I think there are highways to different directions. We get to alter the highway with our different choices that play out. So there's
a sense that maybe there are some fixed destinies, but we get to choose which of those, you know, which of those that we
want.
Walk along. Yeah.
Let's go to Doug in Sayreville, New Jersey. Hi, Doug. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening, gentlemen. Yes, I've got a question here. You've had a couple of guests on that were talking about near-death experiences and yeah. out-of-body experiences, and I had an incident. Well, I'm in well into my 50s now. This happened back in '79. I was 17 years old. I was ice fishing. I had gone through the ice. Oh. And I went under. At the time, I was holding a 75-pound auger, ice auger, to drill the holes with. It took me straight to the bottom like a rock.
Oh, my God.
It was pitch black. I didn't know up from down. I just started heading to the lightest I could see, and as I got closer to the top, I realized, yeah, that's where I belong. I got up there, and I was under the ice and couldn't find the hole where.
Oh, my gosh. This is a nightmare.
Beyond. And I had just released the last breath that I had, and I knew I could not inhale. If I did, I was definitely drowned. I was going to be going out.
Were you alone, Doug?
No, and that was the saving grace. My brother was there with me, and he was on top of the ice on his hands and knees. I could see him, and he's trying to point.
Where the hole is, yeah.
Right. And meanwhile, he's got an ice skate in his hand, and he's trying to chop through the ice. So I started trying to make it through the hole, and that was it. I went out. I was blacked out, and that was that.
How'd you get out?
Well, they had reached. Another fella had seen this on a snowmobile, a little while off, and he came off. He came over and he started helping my brother, and they grabbed me by the hood of my jacket, and they had pulled me up on land. Now this is where it gets strange and. Where I get, you know, I don't know the difference between a near-death experience and an out-of-body experience.
Right.
I find myself now on again conscious, standing there next to this very large hole, with my brother and a man. Now, when I heard this noise, this rumbling when I was in the water, I thought it was somebody with another drill trying to get through the ice. What actually in reality was the snowmobile coming across the top of the ice above me.
Vibrating across, yeah.
Right.
How thick was the ice, by the way, Doug?
Well, the thing was, we were going between 6 and 8 inches thick of ice. And
that's a lot.
I had moved to go to put the last hole. There was an upswell from underneath, and the ice was maybe only 4 inches deep. And as soon as I had gotten into it with the auger, had, you know, bit in good, I had gone with the weight of the auger and myself right through.
Right through. Jeez.
And like I said, the next thing that I remember coming to consciousness, because I blacked out, I was under the water, I was under the ice. They had pulled me out. I didn't know this. They pulled me out. And I come to, I'm standing there soaking wet next to the hole, and my brother and this strange guy that I don't know, they're loading something up on the back of a snowmobile, and the guy's yelling, "Get him to my truck! Get him to my truck!"
It was you.
And I'm watching this, and I'm saying, "Hey, what the hell are you doing? I'm the one who needs the help over here. Nobody's turning around looking at me. They're within 15 feet of me. They're totally ignoring me, and they're yelling, "Get him to the truck!" And there they go. They're off on a snowmobile, and I'm saying, "What the hell? I'm gonna freeze to death. You leaving me out here?"
You were on the back of the snowmobile. You did have a near-death experience. It was not just an out-of-body experience, which, of course, you did that too. But it was tied into the near-death experience, the trauma of you literally shutting down and dying, and maybe the cold, frigid waters what kept you from not coming back. Nick, we are out of time, my friend. Keep in touch. As soon as those apps are done, get a hold of Lisa, and we'll get it up for you on our website, okay?
Brilliant. Will do. Thank you so much for the conversation. I loved it.
Absolutely. Fascinating. Deja vu, precognition. Near-death experiences. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.